Hello, 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 people. Welcome back to another episode of the USL Show, the first one of 2024. That number didn't feel real until I said it out loud. And this episode is brought to you by, well, no one, but it can. It can be brought by somebody. And if you want to be brought by somebody, get in touch with us at theuslshow@gmail.com. USL clubs, if you have stuff going on that you want us to share, please, it can be like, hey, we're hiring a person. We are doing this thing. We are reaching out to communities. Please let us know. We want to tell you all about it. And I just need to go just a minute in here. I just got to say it like this Rhode Island kit. Yeah, when it came in the mail, I'll be honest. When I saw it in picture, wasn't sure. Seeing it in person, it is so much better than any of the pictures did. The crest is awesome. Thank you, Rhode Island. You guys are incredible. Friend of the show, Connor Smith. So, hey, how about that? John, how are you?
Doing good. Happy to be back in the new year. Just on the kit real quick. I'm a guy who does not fit kits very comfortably just because I'm weirdly proportioned. This thing is a very good material, very good fit, beautiful design. Like, shout out to the folks at Rhode Island FC for hooking us up because this thing is killer. And it's cool to have that memorabilia for the first year.
Speaking of kit stuff, I think starting next week, kit season is back, and they are going to be pushing out to your podcast players now. We know some people actually like to listen along, so that's pretty exciting works, and they're going to be streaming out to our normal platforms. Also, this is for people who are watching live. If you are a Twitter X Bird App watcher, we can actually see your comments now. That wasn't available before, it is now. So if you're a Bird App watcher, viewer, whatever, please put in comments. We're excited. Today's a little bit different. It is the 2nd of January as we record this, which means yesterday was the 1st of January, the new year. And people do their New Year's resolutions. And I am excited to get into them because everybody kind of knows what their team needs to do to get better or to continue sustained success. And I feel like this kind of goes with what John kind of wrote about hashtag ad backheeled. A little bit of what to expect from the new year. We've talked about it a little bit off air, but I want to go ahead and just let you open up the door if you have any you want to just kind of say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to start off with the softball of all softballs. In the 11, you got to get a coach. This is a roster that has probably 13 players that could go to bat with any team in the USL right now. You think about the core with the Quinn, the Lindley, the Guinzotti. They've picked up Danny Barbier. They've picked up Aiden Stanley. There's the makings of a team that would have looked really good under Mark Lowry. Obviously, that won't be the reality. He's off doing his own thing because of whatever happened behind the scenes. So Indy needs to go and make a hire, somebody who can play a bright style of soccer, someone who can lead them into the future, get along with what the vision is at this club, and try to lend a little bit of solidity. Like, this is a team that, since they've joined the USL, really has not been competitive at the high level that fans expected them to be. So bringing in a candidate who can not only instill the continuity, but bring a new level of expectation to what the 11 want to do, I think is going to be crucial for 2024.
Yeah, and you know, we kind of talked about this in the past, and whatever officially happened with Lowry and co, for as consistent of a team, as much of a kind of a pillar in the 11 are in the lower league soccer realm, they are not consistent in their coaching. Like, it just feels like it's turnover year after year after year. And, you know, they kind of be wondering, can we get this one right? And they want to spend extra time in getting this one right. But also, you got to fill out this roster with supplemental pieces because we saw what happens when this roster gets thin in the playoffs.
No, absolutely. Like, that Charleston game where they got shredded was solely because they were missing three starters, which, yes, that's a big deal. But the fact that you can't even replace a handful of players and you just get decimated says a lot about the fact that this team was so unevenly constructed last year.
I'm going to go ahead and just, I think, as another personal softball, and it is kind of in that same thread as Charleston. This one's going to Phoenix and Charleston, which is continue the momentum. these are both teams that were in the finals last year, and they are making signings and they are making big wins. They are continuing the hype train, especially Phoenix. Phoenix looks disgusting on paper with more transfers coming in that have not been made quote unquote official yet. One coming out of Juventus and then Rocco Rios Novo coming back. Those are really, really big ones. So I hope they keep the momentum going, and partially because we know the Phoenix Twitter streets, but hey, Charleston's fashion in their own right. If it does not get off to a flying start, not great.
See, I would kind of flip the dynamic there, where what Charleston has done, I'm just completely confident that they're kind of the big boy in the East going the next season. The entire core is back, other than Augie Williams, which something has to be happening there, you would figure. But when you're picking up Malloy, Smith, Jake LaCava, Josh Jack, a sneaky good addition at left back, like, that team is set. Phoenix, a bit of work to do, given that, like, Trejo is out, Arteaga is out. They don't have that kind of goal score you want this team to get. I think Mo Traore is another player who's kind of up in the air right now, and somebody who didn't re-sign with LAFC after spending the year on loan with Phoenix, so I think it'll happen. And certainly what you said with that rumored Italian wonder kid that they're going to be getting in, some of the additions with Rito and Azucar that are bringing that level of familiarity with Juan Guerra. I like what Phoenix is doing, and I think they're going to be in the mix. This was a team that finished sixth in the West last year. Yes, they made the playoff run, and I think that was probably more reflective of their quality than the weight of the regular season. But I would just put in a word of caution, which then, hey, the resolution, keep improving, keep making sure that you get back there.
Yeah, I want to just go ahead and hit one that's in. Sorry to skip over you real fast, John. But we talk about consistency, right? And Orange County, as of today, were able to keep 14 of their players from last year, as opposed to the 13 from earlier today with Fox re-signing. I would like to just send out a thing to personal club of mine and others across the way. Orange County, El Paso, Birmingham Legion, and I'm going to send this one out to Ford Madison as well. For your resolution this year, consistency. I hope you work on your consistency, because when you're hot, you're hot. But when it's bad, it was bad. If you can start off this next year and just stay consistent, stay steady, please, I think everybody's going to be happier, and it's going to be some dang good football clubs along the way.
Two of those teams, I think Orange County has set themselves up really nicely to find that consistency. Like, you think about the core that Morton Carlson took and turned into a real top of the West kind of contender. Everybody but Milan Alaski, which, yes, it's Milan Alaski, but that entire rest of the squad is back and going to be stronger and more familiar with one another. I'm thinking that they're going to probably bring in another player to at least try and recreate some of that magic. I think they're going to be in the mix for sure. El Paso feels like a team that could be really mercurial again. I like a lot of the players they brought in. There's a ton of offensive talent. I think the fullback spots are a little weak defensively. I'm not sold on Javier Garcia and net. They're going to be fun, but consistent, maybe less so.
You know, maybe they don't need to replace Olaski. I mean, Bryce Jameson looks like he's the real deal.
They've got Jameson, Benjamin Bojolo, who was at the Academy Cup on the opposite wing from Jameson. They're kind of just the endless stream of young players doing things. So I would love it if they got somebody to break out in that manner.
What else you got? What other resolutions? I said this before the show. I keep saying revolutions on accident. So if I say that and don't catch myself, make fun of me. What other resolutions do you have?
Yeah, it's one we talked about pre-show, and we'll start off with Detroit needing a striker, but I do want to expand it on as we get into it. But I think Detroit is the obvious one of Ben Morris did an okay job, led the team in scoring, got a handful of goals last year. As a whole, they were the worst finishing team in the league by a mile. Danny Dicchio is somebody who knows how to run a back three system that this team is familiar with. he was able to kind of build a unit alongside Mark Briggs in Sacramento that was very good in the counterattack and dynamic in a way that Detroit really never has been. So I think if they can get a piece of top up top who not only can score goals, but has a little bit of that kind of self-starter, creates for himself dynamic to his game, that's going to be something crucial. In an East that really looks like it's not going to have a single bad team, Detroit has rested on their laurels in terms of the roster construction. They need somebody at the nine spot who's going to get the job done.
Kind of speaking on that, finding someone who will just score the goals for you, I just want to throw another team out. And hey, if I'm totally wrong on this, someone correct me, but I don't think I am. Someone get Fuego, a out and out striker. I was kind of thinking that maybe we're going to get a return from our good friend out at Ford Masson, who had his own supporters section at home. But they've started doing a thing, and I'm going to talk to them or about them in a minute as well. But Fuego is starting to make signings. They're starting to announce things. But with Bezhev announced that he's retiring, they're going to need to find a goal scorer.
The thing with Fuego is that they really don't have many players at all right now. Like, you think about Carrera Garcia coming back, for instance. That's huge because he's such a crucial piece in that midfield. Kudus Lawal, as much as we meme him, can be kind of that guy up top, I hope. But beyond that, they just don't have much of a squad, really. I think this is just whatever my boy at the League One Updater is doing. I think they might have four players right now, which we're not talking about like Las Vegas territory, but they need to step it up. With Jermaine Jones coming in, you kind of figured this was going to be the year that they really get serious, really invest, and try to build that team up. I don't think we're seeing that to the extent we need right now.
Yeah, I see. This was kind of the norm of Fuego, and it was this is them in lights. And I hate to say this because they're being more proactive this year already. Already they're being much more proactive, but you know, them and now lights, they kind of have to keep the faith of their fan base, because Fuego was PR disaster after PR disaster. Lights are a walking PR disaster, and it's borderline impressive how badly they screw it up. And I think that you got to, if those are my big like resolutions for those two teams, it's straight up, you got to be with your fan base. You got to do something. Like, make a connection. I did see that, yeah, Fuego has this affiliate deal with Bellevue in Washington, which is really cool, which is great for them. Like, Bellevue, they're going to be able to get players to and from, and that's great. But if this is another season of just kind of scrapping a roster along, that's not a great way to move into this Jermaine Jones era.
Yeah, I mean, the Bellevue partnership is certainly something good. That's an area in the suburbs of Seattle that's really good about having accessibility to soccer. My grandparents used to live up there, actually. It's cool to see them try to expand those connections in an area of the country where the USL has really never had a footprint. So getting that connection with Central Valley, not Fresno, I know I keep doing that, and then having just Spokane in the state. Cool to see that extension, but it matters little when this club is kind of doing nothing within their own market to make those same sorts of inroads, draw people in. Ultimately, so much of your fan base at a basic level is drawing in families, getting kids interested who bring their parents, who bring their grandparents, and then you build that week-to-week connection because the environment at the stadium is so undeniable and appealing. I worry that you're kind of missing the forest for the trees in the way that they've gone about it. Like, some of the steps are good, but the groundwork still needs to be laid in a more thorough way, if you ask me.
I have another resolution that I am just going to throw out there. And this one's going, granted, this is where you have to remember East Brain, but I want to throw out some West teams as well. Monterey Bay, Rhode Island, North Carolina, Hartford make the playoffs. Like, especially for Rhode Island, North Carolina, on paper. The games aren't played on paper. I get that. But if you're looking on paper, Rhode Island, North Carolina might be home playoff contenders. You cannot have some of these rosters that they have constructed, especially, I think, North Carolina, and not make the playoffs. Monterey Bay, it feels like, and you're going to have to remind me from 2 years ago if they made or not. I don't think they did.
No, they always felt the year miserably. Yeah.
Yes, but then they figured out defensively what to do. That's right. Yeah. It felt like Monterey Bay was always so close, and from clicking, I mean, they had that thing where they were just scoring at like a 40% clip, but they could never get the ball on target, which made no. And so they just got to make the playoffs. And for Hartford, last year, I did not believe in the Hartford project because they just sort of ignored all their problems and said goals are fun, which they were as a neutral. I had a blast. But this is a team now that I kind of believe in. They have a real defensive spine here, and they're still in the process of getting some strikers. I like the rebuild direction, but you cannot do another year, especially under Burke, of not making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, just tackling some of those, like Rhode Island, to me, I'm very high on what they've built so far. They feel more like a 6-8 kind of seed right now. I think the defense is good and maybe just lacking something in the center. I think they need another big name in that midfield. I'm here for what they've got in terms of building with that identity that is really going to let them be possessive. And you know, the Kano is going to have them well positioned to do what they need to do. But I think there's one or two pieces. North Carolina, on the other hand, you look at that squad where it was the League One champions, a team that was very successful in the third division, I would argue would have been competitive for the playoffs in the East already. And they've added 5 or 6 guys who were borderline all USL. That's a team where, frankly, if they're not in the top 3 of the East, I would be surprised. And so, I mean, if they had finished lower than that, certainly I think it would probably be a failure of a season, but that's probably a hot take. Monterey-wise, are you confident in what they've done in terms of making that leap and getting into the playoffs? Like, they got Guzman and Xavi Gonalati from San Diego Loyal. They got Luther Archimedes from Sacramento. That's a really young midfielder, a backup striker, and a center back who's played like 10 USL games, who's good, but they had Kai Green and Alex Lara already. Like, what is that doing for you?
See, that's kind of my thing, though. And make the playoffs is, I guess, not one of those things of your team is ready to do it, but missing the playoffs in all 3 years of your existence does not go well. I mean, we're in year 6 of lights now. They've never come close to sniffing the playoffs. And I obviously, in the USL and American soccer, there is no such thing as like relegation fodder. Like that's not a thing. But if your fan base just knows you as perennial loser, you're not going to get the fans. And I'm really worried for Monterey that if they don't make the playoffs, even if it's a one and done, just make the playoffs. I'm worried about what they have going on out there. I know their fans are passionate, don't get me wrong, but the core group is not who you have to worry about selling out the stadium. Your core fans will always be there. The casual fans, the families they talk about, won't.
Yeah, and my worry there is that you've got the pieces in Dixon and Gleedle and Boone up top. I like what they've got in the back line, Donor at the wingback spot. Their central midfield is an atrocity right now. Like, they're going to get bowled over by anyone they come against. And I think that contrast, I did want to hit on Hartford, where they've done a really good job stealing up the center of the pitch. Like, Anderson Seidu, if he's staying on the field, is arguably the best defensive midfielder in the league, bar none. Jay Chapman, he's not going to be flashy, but he's really going to do the job with those timely tackles. that clean tempo setting in the midfield. I think that they need a striker. And I was going to loop back on this in connection to Detroit, where this is a team especially that you think with the defensive solidity, with the wingers they've got in Epps and Mushabalusa, Shane Beckford, they're not going to want for chance creation. They're going to be able to really throw those wingers upfield, knowing that they've got the safety net. No, they don't even have a proper number nine on the squad right now. Whoever comes in there is really going to have to do the job to make sure that Burke's system can work. Because when Burke had teams that were doing what they were supposed to do, they had Haji Berry up top. Like, they had a number nine who was going to take the chances. Arguably, the unsuccessful Burke teams in his area with Bethlehem, and obviously a different scenario because it was so developmental, but they never had that kind of forward to pay off some of the talent they had in other areas. And I think that's the big question looming over this Hartford team for me right now.
I understand that he's probably done. I don't think it's officially been announced. Maybe it has, but you know, all rumors say that Obinna's done, like Obinna's done, right?
Supposed to be retired.
The thing is that he did officially.
He's supposed to be. I haven't seen it officially, but that tends to be like he posted it on Instagram and I just like don't do that.
Fair. But I understand that last year he only got the 3 goals, but also it's not like he was getting all the service in the world. It does feel like he would be a really good fit for that team this year.
He would be a perfect player to put in the middle because he's got those creative shots where he could really link play and allow those Epses and those Mushalusas to make those runs in behind. Like, it doesn't even have to be the classic goal scorer. I just need somebody who can do a job in that spot. The fact that it's taken so long when Hartford has been very upfront about what they're doing with the roster construction maybe speaks to the fact that they're getting outbid at the number 9 spot. We'll see. And I could be wrong and they'll go out and sign Messi tomorrow, but
we'll see, I suppose. This one, I just wanted to give the name of the, of like, just, I guess it's not even an award, but like, this one's to Memphis. Like, I'm just like, figure out the Oregon Trail. How are you going to travel out west? Like, this is the most east team. I don't think St. Louis is more east than Memphis. Like, this is the most east team that we've had to see do the west schedule, and that's brutal.
That's a really good point.
How are they going to traverse this? Because I don't believe in their back line, and defense travels. Like, that was always the thing that we always said with Detroit, and I said about Detroit, which is the reason I said, hey, I think that I think that Detroit could, you know, beat Pittsburgh because defense travels. I don't believe in what Memphis has in the back line. And if that offense gets cold for any reason, whether it be tired legs from constantly playing plane rides and whatever, this could be a rough year for Memphis.
Just looking at the back line, you're losing Graham Smith. You're losing Reese Buckmaster. They had Aiden McFadden on loan. He's not coming back. All extended, say, Leston Paul in the defensive midfield hasn't been re-signed yet. I like Akeem Ward a lot at the fullback spot. Bringing in 35-year-old Oscar Jimenez to play the other fullback spot, kind of a suicidal move when you're playing in a very high-tempo West. Lucas Turchi, who is somebody who I think is a really good distributor from the CB spot, he's more of a natural midfielder. Like, this team is going to get eaten alive. Their only goalie is Aaron Seager, who I think maybe has one appearance in the USL in his life. I like a lot of what's going on in the attacking half, like Kyle Murphy, Marlon. Those are good gets. That back line is going to get brutalized out west.
Oh, okay. So I just looked it up. Seager played one time, apparently. No, he has never played in the USL, sure, according to this. Nope, he has been on the bench 20 times, though.
That's 20 more times than I have.
Hey, good on him. I'm proud of him. That's the moment I really thought about Memphis being in the West, because they still have to go East for games too. I don't have their schedule in front of me, but you know, you're going to probably have to make at least one, possibly two, to the New England area. You might have to go down to Miami, or at least Florida. There's no way they're going to escape both, you know, one trip or both trips. This is about to be a brutal season for this team.
Memphis actually only has one stretch where they're away 3 weeks in a row, and it's Tampa Bay. Now it's Miami, then Monterey, then El Paso. So that's really zigzagged. But other than that, it's basically just an every other home away, which, all things considered, maybe not the worst case for them.
No, I mean, that's better than I thought it would be. Granted, Tampa Bay to Monterey to El Paso back to Memphis is awful. This is just a begging, more or less. This is going out to where we have Tulsa. And I just want to say, please use Arthur Rodgers as a fullback / winger and don't put him as a center back. Please don't do the mistake. Just use Arthur Rodgers properly and you're going to have a fun season.
I'm with you on this. I think the beauty of if he is in that back line, Blair Gavin was not afraid to let his center backs just kind of be insane. Like Rucci at that left center back spot regularly was carrying the ball wherever he wanted it. If you let Rodgers do that, I'm kind of here for it, because they don't have the creator in the midfield. Like, I like Justin Portillo a lot in the deep position, but he's kind of not the quarterback in the Aaron Molloy mold. Whereas Rodgers, if you're letting him bomb up the flank in that way, I think he can. So I'm with you in spirit. Like, get him upfield as much as you possibly can. I'm thinking it will be from a center back spot, and I'm trusting the process that it goes from there.
The only reason I think maybe it won't is because they brought back Bourgeois. Yeah. And I did like Bourgeois on the ball in the past, so maybe, but he also could just be a bench piece. But I don't know. Someone put, why not put Rodgers at the eight? He can. He is more than capable of doing it, but the way he traverses the flanks is just, I don't think you can take him off.
They've got Milo Yosef at that right wing back spot, who's somebody I tend to think of him more as a natural forward. Like, if you want that kind of end-to-end dynamic, Rodgers is just waiting. And honestly, I think he's going to be all over the pitch for this team as the season goes on. Like, he's an Iron Man in that regard, but he's also got the versatility in spades.
I don't know what to say about this one. I don't have a fancy name, but Miami, I hope you're okay.
Check in on your mental health if you're a Miami fan. That's the resolution.
I mean, they're becoming Italy, which the fact that they lost out on the Italian Wonder Kids, kind of brutal.
They're just, somebody said that they're just signing the friends of the owner, and it kind of, Ricardo Silva's homies in Italy just signing their sons. I don't know if that's true or not, but you're kind of getting the sense that when they're picking up 19-year-olds from the Italian third division, maybe that is the case.
It's not great.
I will say that I respect the fact that they've got a couple of good League One players from Dalton Knutson. Alan Gavilanis is going to be amazing up there. I mean, God knows the burden of creation is going to fall almost exclusively on his shoulders the way this roster is filling out right now. They've got Cabral, who's really going to have a full year to pick up some steam. I think Miami is comfortably going to be the worst team in the league, pending whatever Vegas does. But look out for your Miami friends.
And I kind of said this before, they spent a lot of money on really good talent to be average to bad. What's the difference in doing the same thing and just with a lot less money?
Like in a vacuum, like Benno Famu, Frank Lopez, Gatelanis, these are all players who contribute to a good USL team. This isn't your big three if you're a team that wants to like win more than two games, I think.
Yeah. But is the championship really at the same level as Italy's third division? I've been on the search, and Benton Newman of Vamos Morados, he does a lot of Loose City. Him and I did like a show a while back kind of talking about where the USL fits. I think if you're looking for a decent comp, I would say the Australian A-League, like their first division. I think that those comps in terms of quality of player and wages is as close as you're going to find. I think the championship might be a higher level, at least their average player. I think the top player in A-League is better, but I think the average player in A-League is worse. It's one of those weird moments. That's just kind of my personal opinion. As for Italy's third division, you have to remember all those leagues like your Germany's, like your Italy's, your England's, Spain's, et cetera, they go deep, and money goes very deep in those places too. The high end of Italy's third division will probably beat, you know, the average USL championship team. If not beat, be very competitive. So maybe not awful.
Per the old 538 Soccer Power Index thing that they put together before they discontinued it, the best USL teams would be like comfortably okay Serie B teams. So I think it's kind of the deal when you compare to England, and maybe there is one or two USL teams that would be good in League One, but some of them would be like low-end conference. I think it just varies. It's probably a tweener between Serie C and Serie B, if I had to guess, knowing nothing, never watching lower league Italian soccer. I'll be doing bad Italian accents on Halloween.
For people who want to go back and just watch that Halloween episode, the fact that the mustache was not on before we started recording and just showed up got me. That one, it was so good. I want to send this one to Lexington, and I'm sure you have others.
This is literally just what I was going to go to. I'm so happy you're going here.
I hope we're going to the same place. And it's Lexington and Loudoun, and I'm saying, please keep me believing, because I really believe.
Lexington, for me, I'm all in on the fact that this is a playoff team. Like, you've got so much of that core back between Diouf, Amal Knight, Tate Robertson, and I am in love with almost all of the additions. Like, Ebenezer Ekon, somebody that if you listen to the hype coming out of San Diego last offseason, people thought he was going to be one of the best defenders in the championship. And because of the connection he's got to Darren Powell, the new manager in Lexington, he'll be holding down that back line. They're getting Modesto Mendez, somebody who's an international. He's got some good experience. He's got all the physical tools you want under the right leadership. And I think Powell is the kind of defensive manager who can do that. He's really going to shine. Anthony Patti, who they just got, had an absolutely stellar track record in Nisa. Abel Caputo was someone that the Rowdies tried to pick up last year. And he went down with injury, but he was going to be nailed onto a team that was in it for winning the Eastern Conference. Like, Lexington is building a team right now that has all the potential of a championship side, and they're doing it in League One. I am hyped about the project there.
I feel the same way. I mean, I love what they're doing. I liked what they were doing last year. Going into last year's season, I thought they were going to sneak in the playoffs. I liked their potential more than I liked One Knox's last year. I really liked what Coach Stocks was building there, and I really liked the idea. Now they are even better, and they kind of got rid of, I hate to say it, I'm sorry, Don. They got rid of the old, and they came in with the young. And especially for League One, as across the country as it is, you play three times against the same teams everywhere across the whole country. You're going doing the whole thing regularly. You kind of need the young players to survive it. And I really like what Lexington's doing. Same thing with Loudoun. I understand that Loudoun hasn't put together like the complete offseason where you can say, Yes, yes, they are. This is the 11. They are going to run the league. But if they keep building like they did last year and they've showed us no reasons why they wouldn't, I'm excited. I'm really excited.
Loudoun has always been a team that on talent alone was too young to ever really contend. And yet Ryan Martin had them organized like a team that could beat anybody in a given week. And there were always enough mistakes because of that youth that it never quite paid off in a way that made an impact on the table. But last year kind of felt like the first step into something bigger. They found Coa Santos, they found El Medcar and Williamson, who are both back, Zach Ryan as well.
Allegedly the mustache.
The legend of the mustache. They've taken almost all of those core pieces and brought them back, and they're adding just rock-solid USL vets on top of it. And that's what you need to do to let those creative players shine. Like Tommy McCabe, Drew Skundrich, those are the players who will do all of the dirty work and really liberate the talent they've got elsewhere on the pitch in a way that matters. Bringing Robbie Jam brought back, a former Loudoun guy who did really well with Indy 11, inspired back up on the fullback spot. I'm just a big fan of the way that they are trying to get that veteran presence in the clubhouse, try to lift up a team that was the youngest by a mile in the league last year.
Do you have any more resolutions that you have?
Can I just say, like, Tormenta, you got to kind of show me something that there's intention behind what you're doing. I know that last year was disappointing. I know that there's been a lot of turnover with that squad. They've gone about a pretty unique style of rebuild right now. Like a couple League Two players, a couple college kids. I think maybe only one guy coming in from League One right now. I trust the scouting. Like, I know this club has a vision. The standard for Tormenta in my mind is competing near the top of the table. I have questions if they're going to get there, but that has to be the aim.
My thing with I think they had two because they added Lombardi and they added the guy from One Knocks that I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm with you, but Tormenta did this last year and a couple years ago too, where their whole idea was we'll just promote through the youth academy because that's literally what we were built on. We were a youth academy, then became a professional club. And that seems like it's still going to be their bread and butter, which works really well if you have a Keziah Sterling. You can just drop up top. That's a good recipe. Sign Keziah Sterling. Wonderful idea. Every team should do that. That works when you're doing that academy-style team, but they haven't shown me that they dropped someone into that roster to supplement that loss, which that would even just bring them back to par, which that par was missing the playoffs.
And in a League One that is improving across the board, you're seeing a lot of Lexington-esque clubs try to raise that standard. It just leaves me a bit concerned. And to just kind of extend this, I want Union Omaha to show that they're going to be picking up some pieces. Like, they're in the position where they've just been so good for so long that the championship inevitably was going to come calling, and they're losing their players to opportunities they couldn't refuse. They're in a tough spot with filling out what is a good core with pieces that can try to maintain the great success of 2023. So kind of soft continuation of that resolution for Omaha.
This one doesn't feel as pertinent to the West. I feel like the West is not settled, but I still think that the teams that you think that are going to be your top four teams in the West are still the top four teams in the West. You know, the East, hey, Pitt, Tampa, Louisville, watch your crown. Like, this is about to be a bloodbath. And look, we always kind of say this in Lose City, they're inevitable. They don't miss the Eastern Conference champion or finals. We get it. Never doubt Lily Ball. And, you know, and Lily, we trust. I get it. Tampa Bay, I love what they have on paper, but like all those things are great until you look at your North Carolinas, your revamped Hartfords, your Charlestons that look like a real juggernaut coming in. Did I say North Carolina? I think I did. I don't know.
Double
down on it. The East looks like it can be a real bloodbath this year, and especially I get it. Lily, we trust, but it can only go on so long when you don't have bottom feeders to eat on.
You're beating me to the punch with all of these. Pittsburgh was kind of going to be my next thing, where they've already lost Farrell and Ordonez and Ibarra. They've not re-signed Albert Dickwa yet. Like, bringing back the Forbes, Mertz, Griffin midfield is huge. They hardly have a roster right now. And Lily is going to find kids from who knows where in college, from the bottom end of championship rosters from last year, and turn them into a squad, because that's what he does. I worry that 2023 is going to end up being the apex for what this team can accomplish. So much of it felt like lightning in a bottle, where he had been building up, really making these solid scouting and player development moves. And now the East, and this has always been a team that's not been at the high end of the budget table. Like, Pittsburgh has done it on relatively little resources because Lily is just that good. This might be the year where the dam officially breaks, and the resources that you're getting from teams like Rhode Island and North Carolina, even like Tampa Bay going all in on Bodley and Chrysostomo and Arteaga, like, everyone across the board is putting in the serious resources to get better. If Pittsburgh stays in neutral, I'm worried for them.
You know, is Waite still on roster?
He is not signed yet.
I could almost believe, but when you have a guy who is bordering on GK1 for Jamaica, I understand Andre Blake is amazing, and he is, but, you know, whenever he's not playing, it's Waite starting. Like, you're relying on that. Also, Pittsburgh has been clamoring for a striker like Dequa since they lost Nico Brett. They lost the guy who all he did is score. When you're scoring double digits and got into the 20s, right, without a single assist, like, serious Carmelo Anthony vibes. They lost that guy because, I mean, Cicerone was amazing for him, but he was a guy that was looking to score and to pass, right? We saw that a lot, where he was trying to unlock somebody else, a free runner, to get a better chance. Dequa was just ruthless and would just score on will, which we hadn't seen a Pittsburgh team that dominant since Nico Brett, when he did the same exact thing. And if Lily's trying to reinvent the will and say, I can get this same guy for cheaper, man, you went 5 years without doing that? You can't just say, I'll find another one, when it took you almost half a decade to do it.
No, I mean, that's a huge question there for what that team is trying to put together. Like, it's a magic trick what they've done, and to give up on Dequa because of what's ultimately going to be probably a matter of tens of thousands of dollars, which is a ton of money no matter what. But with the year that Pittsburgh just had, with the fan support they got because of how good that team was, to me, it seems like it's a worthy investment to kind of splash and keep somebody who's a proven difference maker in a Lily system around. But you got to trust the process. This is what they do. And when the clock runs out, it'll be a really big deal for this league.
I think we've hit almost everybody. I just kind of want to just kind of rumble through some teams just so we can get them out there. Northern Colorado, another team that has just been plucked apart. They are in that Union Omaha bracket that you had mentioned earlier. They are just getting plucked and torn apart, and I don't think they've made a single signing yet.
Not yet.
By the way, League One updater, check out what Alex is doing. Love him. Check that out.
Alex Ashton. Well, it's Alex Ashton on Twitter. I don't know what his at is, but he's the king.
League One spelled out updater.com. Sure. Check that out. But Noko hasn't done anything, and you can't just say we'll replace Arthur Rodgers and Trevor Armand, act like that's, you can just do that. You can't.
Maybe they've got the ace in the sleeve, but taking what realistically was the best two players in the league last year and losing them both, like, there's going to be some regression for sure.
New Year's resolution, Locos, yeah, El Paso. Just for Phil's sake, please let them get a little bit farther in the Open Cup route. I mean, Bezhev retired. Phil can sleep easy.
Just on El Paso, like, they've got, Tumimo Chavon, Joaquin Rivas, Justin Dillon, somebody else. Like, their front line is so fun. I'm so excited to see what becomes of that team.
Yeah, League One up there at League One, the number, but the app for, or but the website is League One, as in spelled out, one updater for the website.
Shout out to the gang at the Spokane Soccer Show.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm so excited to have them covering the league. I'm so excited to have Spokane in the mix.
Also, Omaha does not need a new sporting director because Mims was not the sporting director. We had a milk carton out for him because he just kind of disappeared for a year. So Omaha's good there. Greenville, I'm interested to see what they do without Harks around. That's going to be really interesting. I understand that they bring up, you know, the assistant coach who has been there as long as Harks was, and it's probably just going to be another continuation of Harks with some slight variations, but that's still a new voice. That's the voice. And let's see how he fills out the coaching staff around him, because that's a big, big deal. I'm interested to see what they look like.
Interesting system he was running. I wonder if they simplify a little bit. Like, they've got the core of the defense back. I think they maybe just go a little bit more mainstream and rely on the fact that what you get with Castro and McKinnon coming back, and McKinnon's somebody who you can really eyeball as maybe a possible most improved type candidate heading into 2024. Something about the players they brought back, I'm feeling good about the state of the Triumph right now.
I just want to go over to Richmond and say this. Finally, it feels like they're finally starting to do the rebuild since they kind of got poached and torn apart back in, you know, last year. Tormenta losing Hata and him going up to Richmond feels like a big upgrade, which, God bless Fitzgerald, he was bad last year, and he's going back home to North Carolina to probably be GK3 or 4.
It's the Railhawk legacy, and he's just going to go teach Nick Holiday about what it was like back in that NASL.
I like that Richmond has a pretty good goalkeeper just kind of back room now. I still want to see them really just fill out this roster. Terzaghi, you know, decided to have a 10-goal season, and that was a disappointment for him. So can they please just, like, put some more players around him? I kind of just want to throw out to Chattanooga, what is you doing, baby?
Are you skeptical? Because I'm skeptical.
I was skeptical last year, and it wasn't good. And this feels even worse. Like, when they got torn apart and plucked apart by North Carolina, who this is their second year of having an unreal offseason, they were plucked apart and they said, we don't need to replace those scoring players. We can do that. The defenses are bad here. We'll score. And it didn't happen. And they've been plucked apart again. And they've been left with the scraps.
Losing Cardona and Lombardi already, that's really tough. Some of the players they brought in, a couple of guys from Hailstorm who I think are good, but not up to the par of the players they've lost. Lucas Coutinho from Greenville is obviously somebody who can make a difference, real good creator in the middle of the pitch. I worry that in a year where if the Red Wolves are serious about, like, garnering any interest in that market, because you know Chattanooga FC is going to be coming strong, really trying to sell themselves as they move to next pro. Like, Red Wolves need to wake up and realize what's going down, and the actions that they've had this offseason don't seem to convey a sense of the fact that the losing effort is only going to get worse for them, probably.
Did they bring back Rapapa Mensah? Because
I think he had a multi-year, actually, or an option or something.
He was the most random double-digit goal scorer. Like, I didn't realize until the other day that he was a double-digit guy, and I don't know when that happened.
He, I mean, he always had it in him in, like, 2016 at the championship. Good to see him back in form, I guess.
Yeah. We talked about Lombardi a few times. The one of the disasters of the Open Cup last year was not every game was filmed. Lombardi had one of the nastiest volley goals I saw, like, all year. Not too dissimilar to Barrios' goal that he scored against Pittsburgh in the Open Cup. It was very similar, but since no one filmed it, no one saw it, and it was really depressing. So if he can just do that for Tormenta a few times, that'd be cool. Yeah, no kidding. And I think last team we didn't really touch on, or two teams, one Knox and Charlotte. Charlotte, if they can continue and just kind of stay what they're doing, I understand it's not the same exact team, but I still believe in it. Like, they're at least going to make the playoffs. It's hard for me to see them not making the playoffs. I think they're going to be fine. One Knox, where's the upgrades coming? Because they for some reason, like, people were like, "Hey, they're going to win the league. Look at all this championship talent." But the championship and League One are a lot closer than people like to believe. And washed up championship talent is not just going to rule League One. They bring in Sean Lewis, who I don't think he's washed up. I think he's a fantastic goalkeeper. But
he was so good for them last year, and it probably made a team that wasn't quite as good as the standings dictated seem a little bit better. I'm a little bit worried.
I don't know what their plan is.
They got Sivert Haugli today, who's a defender, which is a position they didn't need. He's also probably the worst player I've seen suit up for Phoenix Rising in the last 3 years. So a little bit confused on what's going down there.
You know, the thing is that for one Knox, they did this thing last year where they were like, we're going to promote this League Two talent that we had. They had this League Two talent, which people need to stop sleeping on League Two as well. The top tier of League Two talent goes on to play for the U.S. men's national team. Like, it's good talent. And then in the middle of the season, they said, we don't want you anymore. We're going to go get championship guys. And they just stuck with League Two. I mean, I don't understand what their philosophy was going into that. And it really confused me because their coach, he's a League Two guy going from Brea up to Des Moines and then to One Knox, and then One Knox goes up. I would think he'd be pulling apart for those League Two teams. Just so confusing.
You've said it before. You could take an all-star team out of League Two and they would be an easy playoff team in the championship. The fact that Knox have the institutional knowledge to be essentially pulling off that coup and they're not doing it is wildly frustrating.
I think there's only two teams that we have not actually discussed. Well,
can I throw in a League One Spokane? Just be respectable. The playoffs are going to be hard. They're always hard. I think Lee Bateman rocks. Like, I'm a huge fan of him as a manager. As long as you're not in the basement, that's a success in year one, so long as you're making the moves you need to be doing in that market.
And even so, even if you are in the quote-unquote basement, but you're competitive, because there are competitive teams that always end up at the bottom of the table. I mean, we talked about it earlier. Detroit City, like, they scraped into the playoffs in the championship, and they were just nasty. They were dirty. They did the defensive stuff that everybody in Detroit kind of loved, and I liked it too. Complete sicko. And they were fun to watch. If you know you're into that kind of game, Spokane, if they just be respectable, like, please, I get it. Preach. Yeah. We kind of skipped around because the West is weird this year.
The teams we skipped in the West are actually hilarious.
Like, yeah,
you're ignoring the big ticket teams.
Yeah, Sacramento, your San Antonio's, your New Mexico's, kind of Oakland's, Colorado's.
Oakland at all, yeah. Which says a lot about where they're going this offseason, by the way.
Okay, when I say this, I don't mean club outcome. Oakland is reminding me of RGV in the sense it keeps working, so they don't change it. Like RGV until this last year was like we sneak into
RGV. There's like yes. What if RGV was really good at marketing?
Yes. Like that we're going to sneak in at the eighth spot, and we're fine. We might upset a team, and then last year it didn't happen for either team, but it's fine. Like Oakland just worries me. As for
so many players around, I mean Camden Riley is a really good get. That striker machine there, Sherry, and I'm horribly butchering that. He scored a lot of goals in like Haiti and stuff. I don't know how that projects. He seems cool. Do more things, please.
Yeah, that every year I think you could say that kind of about them at this point. Kind of impressive. Yeah, I don't know. As for Sacramento, hey, Sacramento, keep doing your thing. I fully believe in Armand. I'm gonna let you kind of tackle that one because you wrote about that one.
There's not even a serious criticism or goal for this team. Like as long as they just keep up the level from last year, they've gotten so much better by just getting them on. Jonathan Ricketts is gonna do all of the dirty work on the right wing wherever it's needed. Like this team is silly good. I don't know how to say it any better.
Yeah, they are going to be ridiculous. I'm really excited about what Sacramento are doing. We say that every single year. I really am excited. You wrote about it in Backheeled hashtag ad, but like they are like I think he's going to be your golden boot guy.
This is a team that's never had a number nine like that. Like, I think that's all you need to know, really.
Yeah. San Antonio, hey. I'm worried, but I shouldn't be because they always kind of do it. But I'm worried because someone said it earlier this year, but like, or earlier in the chat, but they think they're going to be kind of MLS loan people again. And I wouldn't be shocked by it.
They don't have a lot of players right now. The Connor Maloney retirement is a really big deal. I was sort of initially going to tie them in with Pittsburgh of, you got to build out that depth. This team, especially running under Alan Marcina, really needs depth, and they do not have it at all. Like, it's a recipe for disaster when you're bringing in half your team halfway through the year. So I'm hopeful for them, and they're going to be good no matter what. Like, I'm not disparaging the fact that this is a top of the table competitor on the right day. The sustainability is always the concern.
Yeah, I will say I do like what we have out of them getting Juan Aguilero.
Yes.
If he stays as this like cam target forward guy, I really like it. If they try to push him out wide, I don't think I'm as in. But if that is what they are doing, if he is going to be your hold up the ball, win the ball in the midfield, and distribute it through and just hold up the play, I really, really like that for San Antonio.
Yeah, he's a great piece. He fits in with the style and the roster construction they want. Add more around it, and I'm here for what this team is doing.
Just real fast, Colorado Springs. I don't know. It's kind of too early, but they did this last year.
Like, resolution, take the step up. you've returned a lot of what you had from last year. You're adding Ronaldo Dumas up top. You're getting Zach Zandy back healthy in the midfield. Those are the moves that should raise expectations. So meet those expectations. Wahab Akwe at the back line too. Like, that's a player who has consistently competed for all league spots. They're doing what they need to do across every single line to improve. So show that in the table and finally be more than that plucky kind of dark horse team on playoff time.
Can I have a personal thing for Colorado Springs too? And this is just to any team that's ever had him. Let Fjellberg do his thing. Please.
They kind of did at times. And hey, I mean, losing to Shane Beckford feels like he's going to really get the full reign to do Jonas Fjellberg things.
I hope so, because he's always so good, and then no one gives him a chance. Like, when Indy wasn't playing him, and then he was always the answer to their problems, I wanted to shove my head through a wall.
That multi-year cycle where Lowry plays him for 5 games and he's great. Lowry benches him, then he gets loaned to RGB and is great. Like, what was up with that? That was the weirdest thing in the world.
Last team to talk about, and it's I'm going to put them in your Colorado Springs, and it's take the step up, New Mexico. They're the team.
I've got the bones of a New Mexico article going right now. Like, they're running it back pretty much from the exact same team that finished the season last year. Sneaky, they finished the year really strongly. I think they need to do a bit more. I like Avion Flanagan. I don't know if he's like your nail on left back. Marco Micheletto is somebody who can really add some spark up front. Curious to see if he maybe ends up starting over Santi Moar, just the way those two arcs are trending. But I think they're going to be another team that's right on the bubble. I'm curious what Eric Quill does with a full offseason there.
I mean, Zico Bailey Truther too. Like, them just saying you can be a fullback, center mid, winger. You can be whatever you want to be. it was fun.
He's a good player, and he's somebody who, I for my taste, really thrived when he got outside of San Antonio. But
yeah, I mean, it's always interesting with those kind of system teams. I understand every team has a system, but when you look at your, you know, when you say San Antonio, they have a system, you know it. Your Pittsburghs, they have a system, and you know that system. See, like, most players, not all, but most players leave Pittsburgh, and they. Their careers just don't do the same thing because Lily Ball. Sort of same thing for Sac or for San Antonio. We haven't seen players replicate the same magic. Zico Bailey, hey, maybe he's the one to break the mold because I'm loving what he's doing.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see Justin Dillon in El Paso in that same vein.
Oh man, that one's so juicy too.
El Paso went and got Dillon from San Antonio and Amando Marino from New Mexico. Like, they're not messing around with directly hurting their rivals.
And that's kind of the whole point of why the USL does what it does. Blake Gardner, the voice for Birmingham Legion, he said it himself in not so elegant terms. The USL is incestuous. Like, players who are here stay here and they just float around. Like...
It's a really good point, yeah.
That's what they do, and especially if you can pick them off your top rivals, why wouldn't you?
No, it's smart. Directly hurting other teams that are going to be competing for the same spots. It's what smart organizations ought to be doing.
True. You have any other resolutions?
I guess let's tie into something we thought we were going to discuss. OKC Energy, keep up the positive energy of existing. Like, I for anyone who missed it, they already had $40 million approved from the state. Today was the announcement. They're getting $30 million more, and they have an actual site where they're going to build the stadium. Huge deal for the Energy, who everyone thought was pretty much kind of softcore dead.
Yeah, I mean, Phil kind of talked about it a little bit, too. He mentions them one time, and suddenly they're alive, so, like, if Phil can just keep doing that for other teams, that'd be cool. but yeah, I I'm really interested to see if they really do make the jump back. Because they say USL, but I mean, is it going to be at a League One capacity? I think they've mentioned, was it 8,000 person? Was that the number that I saw?
I think so. I'm not positive.
I mean, that feels like a fantastic size for them. And this is not fair. This is not a fair statement I'm about to make. But if OKC Energy can get the funding while they haven't played, surely other teams in the league can too if they tried.
Local politics are dumb and weird, so I get why it's sometimes an impossibility. But if you're a Colorado Springs or the first round of OKC where it's $40 million, there is, to a certain extent, a question of how much effort are you putting into lobbying and throwing your political capital around. So I'm kind of with you on this.
Yeah, Switchbacks was around $40 million, which that's wild. How much was Phoenix? Because they had like their practice facility. Like, I remember that was...
Phoenix is weird because it's sort of like a modular setup where it's a little bit less permanent. I guess, what did Lynn Family's stadium cost?
Lynn Family had to be pretty big because of NWSL. I want to look that up right now.
It cost $65 million.
$65 million.
So, I mean, we know the price range. Like, if OKC is spending more than that, this ought to be a nice facility.
Now, one other bit of news, and I'm going to have to find his name because I always struggle to remember names. But we got some of our first news in coaches for Super League. Philip Poole named.
Yeah.
Super exciting. So excited to have some Super League stuff going on. It's going to be kind of crazy and already exhausting to think about how the USL show is eventually going to be nonstop thanks to a winter European schedule. It's exciting, exhausting already, and I can already tell, but I'm so excited to have just really good, high-quality women's footy in around, which also reminds me, if you haven't been watching the W League, you really should, because, hey, here's a secret. That Indy 11 team probably could have competed with some NWSL teams.
I feel like every time you... Well, granted, I'm more in the indie circles of the web. Every time you turn your head, somebody from that team signing overseas, going, committing to a college, doing something really impressive. Like, the talent there and across the board in the W League, nothing to scoff at.
Yeah. All right. Anything else?
I think we're covered.
We or some final
thoughts. So look at us.
You got anything working on in the background? TV shows? What are we doing?
I'm just dreading being back to work. Like, today was the most brutal experience. Like, I've been lucky enough to have been off for 13 days, and boy, coming back into that, not fun. The email inbox just made me want to cry. So I'm living, I'm persisting.
That's kind of what I just did. Tomorrow's my first day back, and I told myself I'm not going to open up my email until I get back, and I'm already getting the Sunday scaries about it. I'm like, oh no.
The Sunday scaries are that much worse when they're on a cold Tuesday night at the same time.
Yeah. For sure. Gotta wonder, how do you feel knowing that your most controversial article was a movie ranking?
I mean, frankly, I've not had that many comments on anything ever. So, like, I love getting the people out there. Risking me for Lincoln Barbie more than I liked Oppenheimer. I'll defend that opinion.
It's the correct opinion, but it's fine. So I guess
I'm going to plug. If you want to see me rank 52 movies that came out last year, get on my Substack.
Check that out. What are you watching right now?
What am I watching? I'm watching Fargo on FX. There was a movie in the 90s. And it's sort of like kind of a pastiche of like Minnesota Nice set within this crime mystery sort of thing. It's become an anthology series where every single season is set in a different time. This one is like 2019. It's the most modern. It's got Juno Temple from Ted Lasso, John Hamm, really good talent. The kid from Stranger Things, the male dude, I can't remember his name. Super fun following along with that.
Meanwhile, complete opposite end of the spectrum. Me and my wife just got done watching a Hallmark TV series.
Yes.
Good Witch. It's great until the very end. And it is, I say it's great. It's really good if you consider the fact that it's every single episode is jam-packed with every Hallmark Christmas movie you can think of. They do those in an hour 30 on the dot every single time. This is compact into about 30 minutes. It's every Hallmark movie trope, every single episode for 7 seasons. And but the end, we just got to the end, and both her and I just sat there and just kind of yelled, no, you can't end it like that. This is ridiculous. It is one of the worst endings to a TV show I've ever seen. And yet, I would still say watch it until the 7th season if you just want brainless fun.
Sometimes you need the brainlessness.
Yeah, it's just basically, this is not a spoiler, for until the ending of the last season, they don't ever say she's a witch. Any of them are witches. Really, they all just like, they're kind of like discount That's So Ravens. They see the future coming like 5 seconds ahead, and it's usually just someone's phone going off. And the girl is big into like herbal teas and like natural medicines, and that's really all you got. And you're like, maybe she just has good intuition and is kind of a hippie. Nope. Witch.
This is wonderful. Nah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's all I got, I think. You have anything else? Last things for the show?
All good. Happy to be back. Cool. Happy to be launching into 2024.
Absolutely. Very end of the show, so I can plug this. We're thinking about starting a Patreon, which is going to get you some content early. We have some fun content in the works. Kid season's coming back, and super excited about that. And yeah, if you're on the Twitter Bird app, leave comments. We can see him now. Super cool, super exciting. Even though he was not here, here is Sir Alan's voice. Not y'all.
Thank you for watching another episode of the USL Show.
The USL Show is now proudly part of the Protagonist podcast family. Please go to protagonistsoccer.com to check out more work. Thanks for stopping by. We'll see everyone again next time.